That's a good way to start. Welcome to the Futile Podcast. This is the old Futile Podcast. Everyone that's listening knows where to find us at www.graniteseed.com/futilepodcast. They can send us emails, futilepodcast@gmail.com. Tonight, we got Ian. Hi, I'm Ian. We got Matthew, who is enjoying a piece of pizza right now.
Hello. Good to be here.
We got Zach, founding member. Like the Justice League. This is like having Booster Gold and like Green Arrow with like Superman and Batman.
Thank you for giving me Batman.
You just call me Booster Gold. I don't know if
you're Booster Gold. Who do you want to be?
I don't know.
Who do you want to be in the Greater Justice League?
In the Greater Justice League.
This is Joshua, by the way.
Hello.
He was also known as Red Tornado. Yeah, I was going to say that.
Red Tornado.
Perfect.
Is that the android?
Yeah. It's the android that controls the space station.
Yeah. Well, no, I thought Martian Manhunter was the main guy with the space station. Tonight, we're going to talk about Christopher Nolan's Inception. So, take it and run with it, boys. I'm just going to sit back. I'm going to see how the lesser members of the league work on this.
And then, what he does is he wants you to talk about it for a while so he can come in and correct
and,
all
and contradict
everything.
You.
Yeah. And then he has to say the final word, then he pushes the off button quickly before he can refute.
I'm like, I win!
That's how he does it.
Yeah. No. We'll try to keep it.
Inception was a great romantic comedy. I felt it was...
Yes. The spoiler alert, a presence of Katherine Heigl at the end to come in as the love interest was no. I don't know. We should set up some ground rules maybe because it's a new enough movie. It's going to be tough to. I'm trying to think about how you spoil this movie, and I'm not sure.
You want to give like a basic outline of what the movie's about?
Well, yeah, we can do that in a second, but I'm just trying to warn the audience if we're actually going to spoil it or not. I think we may, on some level. I think this is the kind of movie that you should probably have seen before listening to this
review. You can just break it into sections, a spoiler-free and a spoiler-free.
Yeah, that's possible, too.
And then you can
post
them separately.
Yeah, we can do that. The later part of the podcast, we will get into spoiler territory.
It'll be spoilery.
And when someone feels like they're ready to mention that, then we'll just do that. We'll drop the spoiler bomb. Okay, I can do a real quick rundown on Inception. Inception is... a sci-fi neo-noir, I guess, where the premise is pretty straightforward. They have this machine that injects chemicals into people that allows them to participate in a shared dream state. And within that dream state, different people, if they have certain training, can create the world and manipulate the world such that, you know, it could be like a great fun experience, or in the context of this movie, it's a technology that's being used for corporate espionage, essentially. It's these main characters, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, are essentially like high-end thieves of ideas, of information. They're information theft, it's data theft, but instead of it being, you know, hackers, computer screens, reflecting on people's glasses, it's in the mind. And so it opens itself up to this giant scope of spectacle and just insane amount of visually very stunning stuff, potentially. And that's sort of the base premise of the story. Now, in terms of the plot, you have the DiCaprio character, who's an expatriate, exiled from the United States, unable to get back to see his family. So he's bouncing around doing all of these jobs sort of reluctantly, like it's the only work he can get to, you know, support his family,
mm-hmm.
via his grandfather, his father-in-law, played by Michael Caine, who's got the children, or is at least the guardian for DiCaprio's kids. And he gets offered a job from Ken Watanabe, who plays a Japanese tycoon industrialist, who at the beginning DiCaprio's team is trying to get information from, and they fail. And he hires them to basically perform what's called an inception, which is a theoretically very difficult to impossible concept in the dream world of planting an idea in somebody's head. Basically, you kidnap someone, you drug them, you plug them into the machine, you jump into their dream with them, or you put them into a dream you've controlled, and then the idea is to try to implant an idea into
without
their head,
without them knowing it. You don't kidnap them.
Yeah.
You have to drug them without them knowing.
Yeah, it all has to happen without them being aware. So there's a lot of cloak and dagger, nifty spy stuff. I mean, you've heard trailers mentioned that it's kind of like James Bond beats the Matrix, in the sense that it's got that whole perspective as reality angle that the Matrix has, but it has this very slick kind of bouncing around, globe-trotting, bouncing around the world angle that James Bond has a little, too. And I think that's a Nolan-style thing, which I appreciate. I mean, that's in The Dark Knight, just big skyscrapers and shiny surfaces, and it's all very lush and very very opulent.
Yeah.
And he gets to do it in this movie. And that's pretty much the premise. That's their big thing. Now, DiCaprio has his own whole sort of, I don't know if I would call it a subplot or a B story, that's sort of the character grounding thing about him and his deceased wife and trying to work out his own subconscious issues with some guilt over a past tragedy that happened with her. And I guess that's sort of the most spoilery material, so I feel like that's not even really all that relevant to talk about in terms of just talking about
the take. You shouldn't have said she was dead. Can we rewind?
I think that's something they just sort of say about a third of the way in. It never really gets let out too far. I don't know. With that, I think we've established enough what's going on in this movie. If people want to just sort of say, I guess they could say their initial impression, whether they liked it or didn't like it. I mean, we can't all assume that everyone loved it, but I would say that I liked it. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I liked it, too. I thought it was well done. He used some techniques that were appropriately jarring. Like, I noticed one of the things he did when they were, like, in the dream world is that, I don't know if you saw this, but there were no establishing shots. It just kind of went right into whatever it was, and it was just fast paced. And that's kind of how a dream works. So a lot of the things that would normally confuse an audience, you just kind of accept it just because it's such a interesting concept of a sci-fi. So I did like it. I thought the whole premise of the film in terms of why they were doing what they were doing was a little weak. I mean, we have the Sato character. He was like, this guy's company is going to get bigger than mine and I can't compete, so take him out. And it was like, okay, let's do it. But once you get past that and they start preparing to go into the mind or the world of this mind, it really picks up. And I thought the payoff at the end was worth it. It was original. I kind of want to compare it to The Matrix, mm-hmm. but not so much that it's like, oh, they ripped off The Matrix, which I have seen before. But I think it was great. I mean, I feel it's one of those films, like most of Nolan's films, that you're going to get more out of it from a second viewing, even though it was entertaining on the first. So, to me, that's a good sign. That's a good sign of great filmmaking when you get more and more and more.
There's more to come.
Sure. Excellent. Sure. I'm sure there's going to be all sorts of symbolism that I missed the first time.
Well, possibly. I'm not sure. I agree that, though, I mean, the great caveat of it being a dream allow, and they even mentioned it multiple times, they said, how did you get here? You're right, no establishing shot. So it all made perfect sense.
Right.
So, Matthew, what'd you think?
Super awesome. 9 out of 10.
Wow.
Loved it.
Okay, then.
Really want to see it again.
And that's saying something, because Matt just...
Yeah, I walk out of more movies than I end up finishing.
Do you really?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm cheating myself if I walk out of films.
Yeah,
it's hard for me to do. Even though the movie sucked, it's like you just want to make sure that it does suck, and the only way you're going to do that is if you get to the end.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. You don't know until the final frame if it sucked or not, right?
Sure. Sure. But then there's that Hollywood mentality. If the first 10 pages don't work, then the movie...
So that's definitely still after all the credits have rolled and everything to decide whether or not it sucked, because there might be a secret ending.
I got all the way through Brooklyn's Finest.
He's going to try to sidetrack us into Brooklyn's Finest, which we'll do as a separate podcast after we finish with Inception. Nice. So Seth, you want to give just your quick 2 cents on the movie? Just your general impression?
Don't spoil anything, though. Yeah.
Thought it was good.
Okay. I mean...
I'm a little out of my league here as far as movie stuff goes.
It's not about that. That's it's sure. you liked about. Well, we can get a specific scene.
I agree with him, though.
You agree that he's out of his league?
Yes.
He's out of his element?
He's out of his element. You're out of your element.
Don't worry, Seth. I'm intimidated, too.
At least I admit it.
Okay,
like
good.
Ian when he's talking about sports.
He does try to butt in with that a lot. He tried to go into the mentality of LeBron James with me the other day.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's why you're wrong, Zach, because I believe LeBron, his heart
yes,
is probably going this way about this thing.
Did you see the SB thing?
No, I don't watch Steve Carell shows.
Well, it's just on YouTube.
I'm not going to watch it.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You can tell me about it if you want. What happened?
No, if you're not going to watch it, it's not.
If you tell me, then I don't have to watch it.
I think that's the point.
But you're not going to watch it, right? Unless you're going to have to watch it now, unless I tell you. Somebody just did a little Inception right there. Now Zach's got the idea that he needs to watch that.
I'm going to drink the idea out of my head.
You're going to drink it out of your head.
I won't remember that any of this happened.
I'm going to drink myself to death, and then I won't know.
Yeah. Did you say jerk myself to death?
I said drink.
Myself to death. One way or another, everything will be out of my body.
Zach, give your impression.
I'm digesting it still. I don't even know what to think. I am gonna have to see it multiple times.
Well, did you? Could you at least say now, like one way or the other, whether you thought it was like a good movie or bad?
It was most likely a good movie.
Okay.
But
there's a lot going on. It does take a bit. Yeah, he just saw it, so
I don't necessarily think that. Yeah, I'm not sure about the whole. I mean, there is a lot going on, but. And there is a minimum of hand-holding, which I appreciate. I appreciate that in films. Though, at the same time, there was a lot of expositional dialogue.
Yes, yes. I was going to mention
that. And the dialogue that was not expositional was clunky.
Some of it was.
I think those were the only detractors from it. But really, it ended up being something I think I am going to have to see multiple times to really kind of...
decide...
I kind of want to know. I think there is going to be a lot of hidden stuff in it. I think there's quite a bit, in fact, that I haven't even that hasn't even sunk in. That I think exactly what you said was correct. I think.
Right. Well, again, I'm going to jump around, but
no. We can start. Let's just sort of start from the get go. The first scene. I mean, like a Bond movie. Just to stick with this Bond and Matrix comparison, it has kind of their.
I thought it was more like a mix between like Transformers and Ferngully.
It was a little bit.
If you're gonna pick two films,
yeah, just pick Transformers and Ferngully,
or like The Waterboy and Deer Hunter, or something.
A little bit like that.
I kind of want to see that now.
Yeah.
No, it was very Bond-esque because you didn't really know what the time period was. It was kind of contemporary, but you have this technology which doesn't exist, but everyone was like accepting
nice
of it.
They wore tailored suits, also.
Yeah.
They did, and it was like everyone, it seemed like everyone knew that Inception, well, Extraction, which is when you take a memory out, was in existence. Like, no one had to be explained, right. This is what it is. I mean, so it seemed like it could have been in the future, but that's kind of like how the Bond films are. Like, Bond, he's in his world, but then he has, like, this car that can turn into a bazooka, and you can run away with it and fly away, so.
Bazookar.
I agree with you, Zach, that there's definitely, like, it's that first, like, act especially is a lot of exposition. It's a lot of just talking about
how stuff
works. I
think seeing it again will show, as he surmised, that the first act is rife with things that will, that if you knew what was going on at that time, the ending would become far more clear.
I mean, there's one thing I picked up just in the, I mean, I've only seen it once, but just in the watching is, I mean, he has that quick throwaway line about how he doesn't like trains, and then you get why he doesn't like trains kind of later on.
Mm-hmm. As soon as he said that, I wondered if Ian had just stood up and left.
I almost did. I was like, he doesn't like trains? Trains
are
awesome.
He doesn't like trains.
Trains are the best in the world.
And then he took his Thomas the Tank Engine lunchbox and left.
I did, yeah. But I left the thermos, so I had to come back. It was kind of embarrassing. I'll admit right now that I can see, just like with Dark Knight, I came off of it like really high from enjoying the viewing of it, but I was still aware enough of like where there were some flaws and some issues, not major ones. But here's what I want to say is it's the kind of movie that's good enough to nitpick little things to take it down from like a perfect to a almost perfect. That's what it is. Because I mean, anything that you could say in this movie as like a negative or a criticism is the kind of thing that you wouldn't even bother with in something that's like just like a throwaway type movie. You know, it's like that. It's like you look at something, you're like, that's perfect. And then you're like, well, only because you think it's perfect do you sort of start really giving it that closer look and being like, well, there's a little too much exposition here. And some of these plot points are a little confused and a thing. But they just, I mean, this is a really complicated movie. And to have been able to pull this off and have this work at all is a feat unto itself. And to have it work and be exciting like it is and stylized and all of that is just, you know, aces.
Yeah, all the exposition that there was, just all the time they had to spend explaining the rules of the dream sharing and how everything works and how you design your dream was just really fascinating.
It was. I actually think that was the best part of the film. Yeah. I enjoyed it. In fact, they took up so much time doing that that I was kind of disappointed when they got to, like, the snow and sliding around and shooting people, which was also like a James Bond film.
Yes, and it was also awesome.
I didn't like that part as much.
I didn't love it, but what I was loving about it was the, I think for me, the part where I really, really turned over and I was just like, this is one of my favorite movies. It was the three action sequences at the same time with the kick-ass music and where it's like, okay, so one guy's got to solve a really complicated physics problem in like a super stylized, awesome, looking hotel room where there's no gravity, while another guy's in a car flipping over in the rain while these guys are fighting snow stuff, and this works. And I'm just sitting there like watching all of it work, and I'm like, it's a feat of writing, a feat of directing, just a feat of all the people that were creatively involved in putting this thing together to be able to do this and have it work. Because it could be such a mess. It could be so convoluted. You could be so stuck being like, wait, what's going on? Whose dream are they in? And you're doing a little of that, but at the same time, you're kind of like, I kind of don't care because this just works and it's exciting.
The person who did continuity in the film should probably get some sort of award.
Right. Yeah, there should be an Oscar for continuity.
Yeah, best continuity.
Yeah, like you were saying, there's some things that you just kind of forgive because what did work worked really well. Like there was a moment, it pulled me out of the movie, like when they enveloped the world upon itself and they started walking up the street.
Yeah.
It looked cheesy, like the CGI, but it's forgivable. Like moments like that.
Yeah, that was a
rare CGI thing that didn't work.
Yeah, right. I would agree because I'm huge about visual effects. Like, and in the end, when they're walking through that that world in the limbo, and it's all made up, I was just looking to see like the cues. Usually, the biggest cues for like all green screen, all psych work with people is a lighting thing. You could probably comp to this, right, Matt? Where it's like the lighting of the people and the background just don't match. I mean, a big example of this is like a lot of the stuff that's on Sci-Fi Channel and
don't listen to this.
That movie The Mutant Chronicles has a lot of that, and it's just like
the entire film. Yeah. The Mutant Chronicles is filmed against a green screen.
It just looks terrible.
I like that movie.
Yeah, you don't.
I did. I liked it. I enjoyed it.
I asked you about it and said it's not that
good.
Really,
and you're
drunk.
I don't remember the movie.
Yeah, it's not that good.
I think I liked it.
There were a couple parts that were almost okay, but it's not that great.
But some of the effects worked really well. Like I was watching some of the interviews, and Nolan actually, in that snow scene in the very beginning, there's an avalanche, and I saw that they just put charges on the top of a mountain and set them off and created a real avalanche. But they really put their actors in there, and they had them like, okay, we're going to start this avalanche, so you got to get here before it gets to you.
And the use of the avalanche, like the use of all of those things, to like wake as kicks to wake them up, and the timing with all that with the score. I thought that I'm not usually big on scores that are just like scores, but this score, like with the Dark Knight and stuff, just worked. It's just this intense kind of thing that just drives the whole thing along. And in that case, I really liked it. And the characters all worked. I mean, we were talking about this earlier, but we didn't talk about it on the podcast that when they're sort of doing the assembling the team. They didn't do the thing where they belabored the characters, like, not getting along and having a bad history and being reluctant to want to work together. Like, the Tom Hardy character, the Forger, is pretty much good to go as soon as he says Inception. And I liked that because I'm sort of sick of those elements.
They didn't have time to stick around with stuff like that.
They didn't, but some movies will do that anyway, and then
movies, like, the thing is, like, we got to break into this guy's bathroom and steal his pearls.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's what they're stealing. This is, like, way more complicated.
You're right.
So they don't have time.
And I liked that they just didn't waste time with that.
Write down that idea.
I love slow motion, and I was really happy to see the way they used slow motion and made it work.
Yeah, it was not
reality. It was essential.
Yeah, 10 minutes ends up being 40 minutes. In
slow
the
motion
first dream,
is never
and then
essential.
From there it's even longer. So.
And it wasn't this.
Never essential, and actually was in this. Yeah.
And it worked. Yeah. And it wasn't stupid, and it wasn't
gorgeous.
Like action sequence, Zack Snyder, Watchmen fight type crap. It was good.
I appreciate that too.
Well, some of it is alright, but yeah. I mean, just it was a pretty. It just all the pieces worked. All the pieces worked, and one thing I want to ask you guys is, did you have a problem with the fact that the Saito character, the Ken Watanabe, basically the guy that hired them to be the thieves, that he ended up basically in the snow level or whatever, teaming up with Fisher, the, you know, Cillian Murphy character, in the dream to help him dismantle his company? Where, like, didn't that seem like a huge problem with the script? But Fisher should know what his competition looks like. So in the context of the dream, you'd think that it would be another red flag. He knows that those guys are there to help him. But he should know what Saito looks like.
The guy who's the Gambit character, he had just met him on the plane moments before. He didn't really look at him, I guess.
That's true.
But
Mr. Charles.
But I think the idea, I mean, I thought about that as well, but I think it wasn't really relevant. Once in the dream, it didn't matter, because he wasn't.
There's cop-outs there, and there's reasons why you could get away with it, but it just seems to me like it'd be a red flag.
It's all dream stuff. Yeah. I read a lot about how people were so high on the idea that this was a thing about ideas, and what makes it so much important in other films is that it's about ideas, and it has so many interesting ideas in it. But really, the idea is revolving stuff that can't be quantified, and that's why they're saying that about it, because it's all imaginative.
Yeah.
It's all imaginative, so you can do whatever you want with it. They were able to run with this because they could make their own rules for everything.
Yeah.
It didn't have to adhere to something. People aren't going to sit down and go, well, logically, you know, this and this, because this is how dream states actually work.
Nobody except they still were able to raise the stakes because they introduced the idea that Fisher had been trained sort of to deal with their attack. Sure.
They mentioned that earlier. That was all foreshadowed and everything like that.
You can train somebody to against extraction, you know, create like a subconscious reaction in your own dream if you feel like certain elements, foreign elements are there. Which is another reason, which is the main reason why I felt like a weak point was just the Saito character being in the dream. It's like once he knows something's off, somebody's trying to get something about his company, and then he sees one of his competitors in the dream. I'm just assuming he would know what his competitors look like. I mean, who knows? Maybe he wouldn't. One thing I think was strong from a sort of movie-telling standpoint...
He had nothing to do with the company yet. His father ran it all.
He just hung out
in cell phones and pictures behind him. That's all he did.
Maybe, I guess. That could be that he just didn't know shit about shit.
He still would have known who Saito was, what he looked like, though.
It's possible.
Yeah. Right.
It's open to interpretation.
Since he said this, I'm kind of more with it.
Okay, I can see that.
The hat.
The hat, but the sunglasses.
No, those are good. Those are good.
Another thing with Fisher is if he was trained to protect his mind from dream hackers, wouldn't he have had a totem? To kind of know that, wait a minute, I'm dreaming. You're full of shit, Leo DiCaprio.
Well, no, but he's telling him he's dreaming.
Maybe he wasn't trained by... No, but he actually had been trained even before Mr. Charles comes in. Maybe he wasn't trained very well.
Because it seems like they were doing a very good job keeping up with them. I mean
they
weren't the totems kind of exclusive to Cobb's operation?
I don't know.
Yeah, but the idea might have been.
First of all, the dream, he didn't have a chance to use a totem because he was all.
That's true, but I mean, like,
they told him he was dreaming. So.
Yeah, and at that point, everything was kind of moving quickly. So
And they kept it moving quickly enough.
And that may have been something they cut because it just wasn't moving fast enough. Because that is the kind of thing where, like, you know, if people sit around a table with a microphone and think about it, then maybe they'll come across it.
Exactly.
Other people. Have we reached the bridge of spoiler alerts now? Can we cross that threshold?
Before we get to the spoilers, I just wanted to comment on all the characters. How awesome each character was. How Ellen Page usually bugs the shit out of me. Seeing I walked out of Juno because she was just so annoying, but she played the same kind of intellectual that she usually gets typecast as, but not in an annoying way. So
and it was a lot odd how unafraid she was of the whole situation, being so new to it and all, and she was just kind of handled it so.
I don't know. On that same note, though, like the wife character, Cobb's wife, she kind of
Maul.
She kind of was annoying.
She was annoying, and she wasn't likable. I don't see why he loved her.
Right.
I don't get it.
Well, but it wasn't...
She wasn't a person. She was a...
They justified all that. I mean, my biggest problem with her was just she's got that just offset mole on her forehead that just bothers me.
Maybe her name was Mole, not Mole. Yeah.
It was Mal, actually.
Mole.
And the credits was Mal. Like Malcolm. Except
her
short.
Name was Malcolm, you think?
It was Mal. I don't know. What? Some French name. Who cares?
Malcolm Jamal Warner played her.
No, I agree with you, Matt. All the characters, and that's what I meant about, like, when they get the team together, they're just all good to go. There was none of this, like... subterfuge.
Well,
it's not like there was backstabbing
motivations
or anything
with any of them or anything like that.
Yeah,
you know,
not
the,
really.
The only motivation that mattered was Cobb's. And
Cobb's. I was a little disappointed. I felt like it would have been nice to get a little bit about Arthur, because Arthur to me was enough of an interesting. That was the Joseph Gordon Levitt character. Yeah. I would have been like, what's his reason to go for this? And they and that's like
he was awesome because he read
combat rat, skills. That shit was awesome.
Yeah,
he knew how to.
He didn't have all of that.
Using the muscle.
Yeah. He was cool. I liked that. I mean, he was a cool cucumber the whole time, and that made it fun. But yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, the characters were all good. But I agree with Seth, too. She just sort of took to the whole thing so fast.
Did I get a point for that?
But like you said, I think you're right, Zach. You just have to move too quickly. You can't spend too much time. And it's not the movie. It's two things that if people are going to be real critical of it, I would tell them this. It's not the movie that's going to go into the backstory and the creation of the machine and the politics and all of that. It's also not the movie that's going to be all about, oh my God, they're in a dream world. Imagine you could do anything and they do this. You know,
tell you what you can and can't.
Yeah, yeah. They do. They establish the rules and it's a very contrived dream world. It's not like a Michel Gondry, then your hands are giant and then things go crazy. it's not an art house dream movie, you know? It's dreamscape. It's,
yeah, the biggest thing was just having the world upside down on top of them.
Yeah.
That was like that pretty much says we can do anything. Let's move on.
And that was and that was also him showing her, like, he was impressed by her being able to do that, and then he immediately told her that, you know, if you really start messing with this stuff too much, then it becomes a problem because the subconscious.
See, they spent a lot of time setting that up, and that never came into play. Like, if you
it didn't so much, except for in that part in the in the bar where he's trying to get Fisher to.
Yeah,
it did enough. But it never did pay off. They set it up. They took a lot of time setting it up, and it just never wasn't. I thought like at some point they're gonna have to like run from like regular people, but
well, they didn't at the end. But I mean, it was a plot. It was happening at the beginning with that riot. That was what that riot was all about. Was that they had been going that far contriving it that much. And so it also worked just to answer those questions that people would have, which is like, well, why don't they just, you know, because, and it's like, well, and it made sense. It was like, well, yeah, someone's brain's going to be like, this is too chaotic. This doesn't make sense. And their subconscious would react like a defense mechanism, like a white blood cell or whatever. It would attack the invasive element.
Right.
And just to close, I mean, this might be a spoiler thing, though. Yeah, this is spoiler. So, okay, so now pause it and go watch the movie if you haven't seen it already, but I'm assuming most people will have seen it by the time they listen to this.
Or go watch Brooklyn's Finest.
And we'll do a little Brooklyn's Finest as a stinger, just for all you guys that stick around after the credits. But the actual sort of payoff of the Inception, I feel worked. I mean, that was maybe not the biggest part of the movie, of whether the movie would work or not, but it was pretty important. It was two things for me. It was, these guys are thieves. Why should I care about people that are criminals doing something? And he managed to contrive enough of a situation for me to get behind it, where it was like an anti-monopoly kind of semi-benevolent thing. You know, I mean, obviously this guy was doing it for his own best interests. That's why he was paying them. But it was one of those cases where it's like, you know, well, you're going to prevent basically an evil world power from possibly arising. So they kind of use that as like a hand-waving way to make it so that you're not going to be completely judgmental of the fact that these guys are thieves. And then the way that they manipulated the situation to get him to arrive at that safe and everything, and it wasn't until like I saw the little pinwheel that I was like, there you go. That's hardcore. Rosebud. Like,
see, that worked for me, but the question was,
is that what they call those?
Did they put...
It's like Citizen Kane.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You're interrupting.
Did they design that? Did they put that in the safe? Or was that just, it could have been whatever Fisher wanted it to be? Because they set up a moment in the beginning where they take his wallet and he looks at the photograph of him, little Fisher, holding the pinwheel. And they're like, is this useful? And like Tom Hardy looks at it, could be. And then when he goes into the safe, Tom Hardy's standing there watching him. Yeah, so I was like, did he put that in there?
I absolutely.
Or was it already in there? Did like Ellen Page put that in there? I mean,
but that's the thing that he was emotionally connected to. So
yeah. And that's what worked. And then that's what almost got you like, to, you know, it almost incepted you as a viewer, like, to be like, yeah, he wants him to be his own man and go his own way.
But it seems like they didn't know about the pinwheel until after they went into the dream.
Well, they no, did they get the photo?
They got the photo in level one of the dream.
In level one,
out
of the dream,
wallet.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
at that point, was it already programmed that way? I mean, or were they just doing it on the fly? Just,
they found that as they had invaded his subconscious or whatever.
Yeah, there was some on the fly stuff going on.
What do you think you get a $500 wallet?
I don't even know what you would make a $500 wallet out of.
Like hippo, I guess.
Maybe, yeah.
Like $105 wallets and then, like, splice them all together.
Yeah, a giant wallet.
$105 wallets. Pieced together.
So, so now we're in a spoiler-free territory.
Wait. One more spoiler thing.
Well, that's what I mean, spoiler territory.
What did Fisher's father say right before he died? I'm disappointed you didn't try.
That you tried to be
you
me.
You tried to be me.
I'm disappointed.
That's what he imagined in the dream.
Yeah. Okay.
But this is the great thing about the story, is that it's all that cynicism, you can still take it as that. He could have, in real life, his father could have really been like, I'm disappointed.
Yeah, they set that up so that he would feel better about.
Yeah, it was all about, you know, good emotion versus bad and everything else. It all felt correct.
And he set it up too. He was like, well, when my father was dying, he mustered the energy to say something to me, and I can only make out one word, which is disappointment. So he could have
everything he got in there
said
was
anything.
All
yeah,
useful.
So again, when he said that to the Tom Hardy character in that moment, when he was pretending to be Tom Berenger, it made me feel like he was designing this on the fly as they were in the dream, because he just got that information.
But they were going to have
already
to do
in
that.
The dream.
Part of the that's fine. Was going to be
well.
They
that's
have to
why
do
that final level had been designed by the Tom Hardy character, by James, because he's the one who had gotten all that information.
It had to be. That's the only way it could work.
Well, he designed part of it because he designed something about like a duct that
he
let
designed
him speed
the
up,
inside,
and she designed the outside to make it like a labyrinth. Because I remember in the snow level, they're talking to her about it. But anyway.
That's why I need to see it again.
Exactly. There's
and the other question
things.
Is, and I have my theory as to why this is, but you've got Sato and Cobb. They both go back into limbo, and he's looking for Sato. Sato's significantly older, and Cobb hadn't aged a day. Right. And I've got a theory as to why that is, but I was curious in terms of what you guys thought was going on.
Well, it's because Sato died that much sooner, like 10 minutes or whatever it would be, and then how that how that works. Sato's in his limbo, and then I mean it gets really murky at a certain point with the limbo stuff. It gets like, well, wait a minute, you can go from any limbo once you're down there, like you can just sort of walk into the next guy's limbo.
Cobb was there with Maul and Juno, and then Juno she jumped off during the kickback, the kickout, but he stayed. So how did he end up from being in that kitchen with Maul
to
and
the
his
beach.
Kids to the beach
to Sato's limbo?
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I can think is that just if the machines are connected the right way or something, and then they stay offline, then it still works, I guess.
I don't know. That my theory was connected. Because when he was talking to Maul or Mal or whatever her name was, he was like, we did grow old together, we lived a whole life, but when they committed suicide before they left, they were really young. So I'm thinking what it was since Cobb created most of Limbo anyway, that was mostly out of his subconscious, he knew where he was and he knew that he could control his age, whereas Sato probably forgotten that he was in a dream, lived his life the way he thought it should, and he aged at a regular rate, opposed to Cobb, who could have been there just as long but knew what was going on and was like, well, this isn't real, so I'm not going to age.
Well,
that was my theory.
I got the impression that Sato did have that problem. He did like age in that world, and Cobb didn't. Cobb just went and found it. Because
he knew it was his world. But even to some degree, when he confronted Sato, it was like Cobb was almost forgetting he was in a dream. He was like, I came here to tell you something.
Yeah.
And then he kind of went into it. So he could have been there for decades. Who knows?
That's possible. The age thing and the physical expression of that was, I don't know, it was sort of a cop-out. I guess it was just so they could have pretty people walk around all by themselves rather than ugly old people. And then they reshot some scenes to sort of make that point that, oh, but they really had aged or something.
What if all those pretty young scenes were just them earlier?
Well, no, because like
when
you said,
committed when they suicide committed suicide to get out, they were young.
With the train, they were young.
Sure.
So
that's...
I just felt like you could control it if you knew it was a dream, but if you didn't, then you're going to think it's real.
Well, And that's an... I mean, one other weak point I had with it that was kind of the big conflict for DiCaprio was... And it seemed pretty contrived and kind of weak, was that Mal made it basically seem like he was a terrible husband on paper, so that then when she committed suicide, even though she was deemed sane, he would have to leave the country because of what?
It was to force him to go with her.
It was so he didn't have any guilt, like, so what's going to happen to
the kids? I know, but then what was the big deal with him, like, needing to leave his kids and not being able to come back into the States? What crime did he
commit? They thought he killed her.
That seems weak, then.
She sent that letter to her attorney. I'm nervous. He's getting violent. I'm afraid.
And then she jumps off a building, which is like an obvious suicide, you know?
What if he pushed her?
Not a lot of evidence there to support. I'm just saying,
if I write a letter...
It was weak. It was a little bit weak.
I don't think that was weak at all.
If I write a letter saying that I think Ian is going to kill me, and I turn up dead falling out of a building, they're going to come to me first.
Yeah, they are. They're going to come to me and investigate.
Throw you in... Pokey.
But I don't know if they're going to completely... If in the end their case is strong enough, you know, I'm not going to flee, for crying out loud. And then did that guy have crutches, that attorney or whoever gave him the tickets and told him to leave now? Like, that seemed like it was more important than it ended up being.
He had some really ugly kids, too. Did you notice that? Like, the casting of those kids, they were hideous.
Wow.
I mean, there are some cute kids, but
compared to the kids in Shutter Island?
Running around corners, though. That's hard to do.
It is hard to do. I mean, I would have preferred if we just saw the back of their heads for the majority of the movie, because they were just ugly. So.
What about the Shutter Island kids? Were they better?
Oh, yeah.
The
little
This is basically the Shutter Island 2.
The rest of them. Something interesting about this, because this was definitely Nolan's baby project, and I was talking to Matt about this yesterday, was that the main character's name was Cobb. And if you look back at his first film, The Following, the guy who was breaking into houses, his name was Cobb, too. And in that movie, he was going into your home, which was a private space, taking something out and putting something in just to plant ideas in your head, which seemed like it was a callback to that.
That's clever. Film. I haven't seen The Following in a long time.
Corny.
He had been working on this film for 10 years, and I don't know when The Following came out, but obviously that inspired this film. I thought that was something, because I was thinking about it last night. I was like, Cobb and Cobb, huh? I was like, what are the similarities? And they're both.
You think he invented the salad?
Yeah.
The Cobb salad.
Or the Thai?
There were a lot of big-name actors. Like, Michael Keane was wasted, more
He wasn't
or less.
Wasted. He was just doing his thing.
It could I have think been any Michael actor. Keaton.
It looked like he only had one or two times.
Michael Keaton was too busy being in being the other guys.
It was interesting watching these actors who I haven't seen in a long time, just really old. Like, the father of Fisher Behringer. Was the dude from Jurassic Park 2.
Yeah, Postleway.
Yeah.
He's going to be in, like, Machete or something, too, right?
Yeah, he's in something.
Yeah, I love the Behringer was back. I mean, that's what Nolan does. He takes your what's his name? Who's
Eric Roberts?
Eric Roberts, but also the guy that was in Batman Begins from Blade Runner. Why can't I remember his name? Rutger Hauer. He's like a Tarantino kind of. He sort of resurrects these now swollen like 80s sort of stars like Behringer and Hauer and stuff, and just puts them in movies for like these bit parts kind of sort of. And so, yeah, no, I mean, yeah, the cast, like we've said a few times, was just solid and it worked really well. And I was very impressed. I mean, the DP knows what he's doing on all of Nolan's films. They just look so great. Yeah, that joke has not been made ever on this podcast, I don't think.
Okay, is this a spoiler?
It's fine, we're into spoilers now. So now
the zero-G fight scene in the hallway. There's three ways they could have done that. Complete CG with motion capture, wire work, and like an incomplete set that they just filled in with CG, or they could have built the set and put it on a plane and done the Deadfall thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the Deadfall thing. What do you think?
I think it was wires.
It looked too good for wires.
Yeah. It looked perfect.
All
the clothes were just everything was floating there. Everybody, like, even the tension, like the gravity that usually like pulls your face down. Just wasn't there. It was like everybody was just...
And hell, they shot Apollo 13 like that,
exactly.
Right? So I'm sure, I would have to think that would be it.
That's
really impressive.
That's very impressive.
And the choreography, the fluidity of everything,
The way they did it in Apollo 13 is they had a plane that just flies up and then down and then down, and then it just creates that zero-G effect.
And that's that. You know, people get married that way these days.
But see, it would have to be barrel rolling too, because like the world was...
No. I think what they did for that was just a rotating set, a tumbler.
When
they were doing the first fight scene,
when the van was flipping over,
that was awesome.
Yeah, I think that was
the part where I was just like watching all three stories happen at the same time, being intercut with the music and being like, "This is awesome."
When that fight scene happened, that's when they won me, because up until then it was acceptably confusing. Like, I was like, "Okay, it doesn't make sense, but it probably will." But then that's when they won me over. I was like, "Whoa,
he's not
fucking around."
Yeah, exactly. It's like you only maybe. That was where I was like, all other directors, even Spielberg and stuff, were probably jealous of this guy right now, because it's like he hasn't really made a bad movie yet, and to just turn around and have, and he can like completely own this as his own. It's like he wrote it, he directed it, he did it with big time money from another good movie that was a high. It's like Nolan just can make good thinking action drama spectacle pieces, and it's like so awesome that they're making enough money that he's able to keep doing them, because so far they've been good. His track record is solid for the most part. I mean, he's not perfect. Like I said, there are flaws in all of this stuff.
He's definitely one of my top three favorite directors right now.
Yeah, definitely. So. I mean, I really hope, like I was telling Seth, I'm like, I hope this movie is number one until Expendables. And then Expendables can be number one for a month. And then we'll have good movies made. If these movies both bomb, then nothing will be all that great at the theater. It'll be like Twilight 17.
Do you seriously think Expendables is going to be like really good, though, or what?
I think it'll be a lot of fun. But I'm hoping it will be a lot of fun. And I'm thinking it will still make it good. I don't think it will be the same thing as this.
Rambo.
I love Rambo.
Stallone wrote and directed that. Yeah. He is going so strong. You know that knife that he forged in
the
Rambo?
Machete.
He really did that.
Yeah.
The problem.
Took a truck spring.
The problem.
8 hours
using
hammering it out.
Well-known actors
so
for
badass.
Action films, though. My only problem is you're using all these well-known actors, which is cool, but inevitably that means you're going to have a bunch of old guys running around doing an action movie, because they're, like, super old, and it's like, if you got some younger guys, it would have looked a little more realistic.
Partially,
I hope they play on that. I hope they play on the fact that they're all... really
I think they
should run in Michael Cera to
Christian Bale.
I think it is Mumble and come on.
Here's an interesting story.
They could bring in Facebook guy. Did you catch the trailer to Social Network with the Radiohead song and everything? That made me just be like, this is boring.
I'm doing a film with
you like Fincher or what?
I like Fincher, but he's wasted on something like this.
You're dumb.
Is he going for his Oscar still? He's just gonna make terrible movies like this till he gets an Oscar.
He's doing the Social Network now. It's a feature on Facebook.
I know that was the trailer that was there, and it was just like, I don't care. This looks like Pirates of Silicon Valley 2 or something, you know?
You look like Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Oh, you got me. No, I think Stallone broke his neck fighting Stone Cold for the Expendables.
Did he?
Yeah, they're going to play
on Jean-Claude Van Damme, but he thought it was beneath him. He was like, fuck you,
He was just off JCVD. He thinks he's better than he is.
He just said, Universal Soldier 4, and I was like, and this is beneath you? I mean...
It's because he told everyone who was going to be on it, he's like, listen, I want to get everybody, so that means I can't pay any of you. Like, all right, I'll do it.
I hope Arnold did it for free.
He's like actually out for justice now.
Yeah.
You know, like Arnold and Bruce are only going to be in that one scene in the trailer.
In the church, but that's okay. I think Bruce is going to be a little more.
Jan Michael Vincent. They should have got everybody.
Even Seagal isn't in it. It seems like he was perfect for that.
Yeah. He turned it down.
Did he?
Yeah.
Lame.
So did Russell.
Yeah.
Lame.
It's a wave, though. It's fine.
I don't want to see it.
Well, you know, it's not going to be. It's not going to be a good, perfect movie. But hopefully it'll be fun. Hopefully, like with the Crank movies or something, it'll know what it is and it will do it.
I may
be
totally crazy, and I was really hoping this wasn't true, but I forgot immediately afterwards, so I didn't look it up. But I saw a trailer for it the other day, and it said PG-13.
There was a bunch of rumor about one of the producers wanting to test that idea, and I had heard no way, that got kiboshed right quick.
Okay.
First off, the motivation?
What I'm telling you is I saw a trailer, and it ended, and it said PG-13.
Recently?
2 days ago.
Well, yeah, because think about it. The people who are going to see that movie the most are going to be the teenage boys.
But absolutely not. First off, but the people that are going to see it the most are going to be the people that are old enough to see R-rated movies because they remember all these guys when they were in their prime. The whole thing is about that.
You have to understand.
The whole thing is all these old guys, the
boys,
kids don't remember.
They are prone to see a movie 4 times in theaters. We'll all see it.
Either that or it said it's open.
But they're the ones who see it the most, and which is why you make a movie like this PG-13.
Well, let me see what day that is really quickly so I can annoy you or not.
It doesn't matter. No, I agree
back
with you, Joshua, but they're almost not the market because they'd be like, what's Total Recall? They're like, I just saw blah, blah, blah.
August 13th is a Friday, so that's possible.
It is possible,
Maybe it's NC-17.
I hope it's NC-17.
We have to keep warm tonight.
Yeah,
so take off your clothes.
Oh, my gosh. No, I don't
Before
know.
We go in, let's rape this chick.
They've got Statham in it for the young kids. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the young kids love Statham.
They love the Statham.
That was the Jean-Claude replacement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad. That was a superior replacement.
The 9-13 demographic loves Jason Statham.
Yes.
That's what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. The kids.
The 6 to 5, the 6 to 15.
The kids that, he said, will repeat view the movie.
I'm surprised they got Jet Li instead of Jackie Chan. I wonder if they went to Jackie first and settled for Jet.
I think Jackie might be a little too
old. Getting
old.
Yeah.
Well, that's the theme. They're all old dudes. And
he gets too much money, too.
Yeah.
Plus, I don't think he ever actually killed anyone in a movie.
The budget for that was $20 million, I looked up.
He didn't kill anyone in Drunken Master?
Pretty cheap.
No, he doesn't kill anybody.
Weird. He beats the hell out of that guy, though, huh?
He hurts him.
Yeah. Hurts him good.
It hurts so good.
Well, on a lighter note, they're making Mad Max 4. Have you heard about that?
Yeah.
I've been hearing about that. That's but Tom Hardy's going to play Mad Max.
Yeah.
That's where...
It won't be Gibson?
Tom Hardy, yeah.
Yeah, Gibson's...
It could just be him just
screaming about
racially
lives.
Cleansing the earth.
Juice!
Rolling across the earth, just committing genocide.
By himself.
With a handgun?
Yeah.
Mad Max 4, the Holocaust.
The Holocaust.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no Mad Max. Poor Mad Max.
Real time.
That's too bad.
this bring it back. What do you rate Inception?
Inception is a 4.5 out of 5 for me.
4.5 out of 5. And you said nine.
I, on the other hand,
is
a 9 out of 10,
which is the same.
What do you say?
I'm going to give it an incomplete until I watch it again.
An incomplete?
Incomplete.
What does your gut tell you right now?
His gut tells him to watch it.
My gut tells me 3 out of 4. Or 3.5 out of 5.
Really? Only a 3.5?
Okay.
A plus.
That's a 5 out of 5.
Oh, God. Okay. So I do feel like I'm going to enjoy it more in the second viewing. But on the first viewing, 8 out of 10, 4 out of 5, and a B plus.
Okay. Wow.
Get the whole market.
No, I mean, I just, and I talked about this in the Loft podcast, just that scene with the three action sequences happening at the same time, and that all worked. Part of my reviewing of movies now has to do, is just, I mean, it's inevitably connected with the actual ability of the person making it to make that happen. And so if it works, it works, and I'm just like that much more impressed by it. And so that kind of elevates my grading, whether or not I'm taken out of the movie while I'm sort of deconstructing it as watching it or not. And that's kind of what happens with Inception. I mean, honestly, I can't do that anymore. I'm taken out of every movie when I watch it because I'm doing that all the time. I'm always deconstructing stuff, and that's how I pick up on... I think I do that because I want to be able to not have to see it.
Deconstructing Harry?
A little bit.
Did you?
Yeah. No. Just coincidental.
It's not a coincidence if you do it every time. You wouldn't have known going into it that you're not deconstructing.
Possibly. But yeah, so that's sort of my thing, which is why, I mean, I can see the flaws in it, but I really got a serious kick out of it. Okay, so now that we're at the end, best thing around. So you just watched Brooklyn's Finest, Seth. Why don't you tell us about what happens in Brooklyn's Finest? So Don Cheadle and Wesley Snipes become cellmates, but Cheadle is actually a cop.
Wesley Snipes in jail. Didn't he like do some tax evasion?
That's method acting right there. That's commitment.
They let him out for this.
They let him out.
No, they talk about that, but the movie starts where he's like Don Cheadle's like undercover, but he went into jail to be undercover, so they believe
like
him.
Like The Departed.
Like, yeah, and then that's basically just that.
Did he get raped?
No. I don't think
so. Are you sure?
He got in a fight with two guys, and Wesley Snipes saved his life.
Oh, nice.
And then they want him to... They're going to promote him if he rats him out or does some deal or something.
Yeah.
And they're working on
nice.
That.
Sounds
and then,
better.
What's his name? Ethan Hawke's in it. And he's like, it's like a separate story. Mm-hmm. Three separate stories.
Okay.
And he's
do like, they intersect?
He's trying to steal money from... On drug, they go on drug bus.
Mm-hmm.
He tries to steal drug money. So
he didn't learn his lesson from Denzel in Training Day then.
No. And then there's some other story of some dude that just like...
Who's that, the dude?
Richard Gere.
Yeah.
Richard Gere is the beat cop, right?
Yeah, he's like 7 days from retirement, and he like has this rookie partner that like does something stupid, and then...
And then he tries to cover it up so that...
You almost sound like you didn't watch it, really.
No, I watched it.
You sound like you don't like it now.
It was one of those movies where I saw the poster, and I was like, this looks terrible.
Yeah.